You're listening to Well Met.
Well Met.
A Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com.
Well Met.
Hey everyone, welcome to a bonus episode of Well Met, Hearthstone podcast brought to you by BlizzPro.com. Today is Monday, February 10th of the year 2020, and here in Kansas City, I'm your host, J.R. Cook. And like I said, this is a bonus episode because I'm not joined by Mr. Danny or Mr. Ray this episode. That will be happening later this week in our normal schedule, but I am joined instead, and I kind of hinted at it on our last episode, Mr. Deck Tech. How's it going,
man? How's it going? Oh, man, it is awesome to be here. It was weird to listen to the intro song and not, like, rock out with it. I had to sit there quietly. Normally, when I'm listening to the show, I'm in my car, and I just love that accordion.
So you weren't over there rocking them, because I was. I
mean, that's rocking out, like, silently, though.
Well, but see, I have the secret that I forgot to tell you about, is I can mute both me and you while that song's going on. So I'm sitting over here rocking out, not silently, and you could have, too. But,
next time.
So, but no, so we've talked about you a lot on the show. You've been on a few other podcasts. You write for BlizzPro. But I feel like we haven't talked about you, you know, like who you are, what you do and things like that. So who are you?
That's the question. Yeah, I checked it in anticipation of this, and I've been writing for BlizzPro for a little bit over 3 years now.
I'm glad you remembered that because I don't.
I mean, I looked it up. I didn't remember it, but yeah. I in that time, I've kind of taken over. I've gone from like the junior writer to taking over most of the Hearthstone page. So if you head over to blizzpro.com/Hearthstone, or I guess maybe Hearthstone.blizzpro. Yeah, Hearthstone.blizzpro.com. You'll see most of the pieces there are things that I'm reporting on.
It's like you kind of went from, you know, kind of writing here and there to me just being like, I guess this is your website now.
Yeah, I mean, I've loved it. I started writing for you guys because I had my own personal little blog and my presence on Twitter, and I just wanted to expand it. And I was really glad to be able to join the established team over there at BlizzPro, and it's been fun growing with it in that time. Yeah. And I'm glad to finally be on the show too, man. Like you said,
We've talked about it for a while. Yeah. Schedule doesn't line up, unfortunately. Yeah,
it's rough when you have to do adult things.
Yeah, well, when your co-hosts are on the East Coast and you're on the West Coast, it gets a little difficult to be able to line that up with folks, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely.
Especially when we can't record until kind of late in the day as it is. But so what made you eventually... Oh, there's the dogs. What made you eventually want to write for BlizzPro to begin with? I mean, what were you doing before that?
So I started playing Hearthstone during the open beta, and I've always been a card game guy. My two main genres of game have always been card games and like classic Japanese style RPGs, starting with the Final Fantasies, as most people my age did. And so as soon as I heard, I knew about Blizzard before. I'd played plenty of the Blizzard games before Hearthstone, but I never fell in love with any of them because they weren't my main style of game. But as soon as I heard they were making a card game, I was like, yeah, I got to get in on that. I know that Blizzard makes good games. They're famous for doing so, and I want to see what they're up to. And I instantly fell in love. I loved it. Prior to that, I played a lot of Magic the Gathering, and Hearthstone just felt like the new Magic, where it was built for the digital medium, and it didn't have the problems of physical Magic where you have to, like, you know, go to a store and stuff. You could just play whenever you want. And it was just a much cleaner system than the Magic Online at the time. And so it was just like leaps and bounds ahead of any other card game options that I had at the time. I was in law school. And so I couldn't really go to a card shop to play or anything. So I definitely appreciated the ability to play. And that just developed over time. I wanted to get more involved with the community. I was posting a lot about it on, like, my Facebook, my personal one, because I was just so in love with the game. And then at a certain point, my wife was like, hey, you're talking, like, way too much about Hearthstone. All of our friends can see this. You are embarrassing. And I'm like, that's fair.
Please go hide this someplace else.
Please stop. I didn't sign up for this much nerddom. I'm like, all right, that's fair. So that's when I joined, like, the Twitter community. Initially, I wasn't even, I didn't even have my name attached to my Twitter account or my face. It was anonymous. And it was just really cool. Very early on in Twitter, I messaged Admirable. And he, like, messaged back. And I was like, this is awesome. I could talk to my favorite caster. Like, that was something that I just never imagined growing up. You know, again, going back to playing Magic, you would never, like, message Randy Bueller and he just messages you back. And and now you can. But maybe. Kibler would, probably. and it's just, it was a really inviting, awesome community. And the more that I got into it, the more that I knew that I had to get even further into it. And so shortly after I joined Twitter, I wanted to expand that. That's when I started up my personal blog. And then I ran that for a little bit. And it's still going not as frequently since I write for BlizzPro for a lot of the stuff that I had previously put on the blog. But I still keep it up. It's at Tavern Blog. It's thetavernblog.wordpress.com. I wrote for that for a bit, and then that's when Kevin actually left the show. So that was a long time ago now.
Yeah.
And that's when I reached out to you guys.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, they're going to be down at least one person. I didn't know exactly how your setup worked over there, but I know Kevin did a little bit of writing as well as the show. And so I was like, well, they're down someone. Maybe I can see if they want someone. And I just emailed you, and you took a look at my blog, and you were like, yeah, all right, cool. Come do it. So
yeah. Little do people know how easy it is to go write for BlizzPro, because it's like, especially if you already have, like, work that you've done, I'm just like, yeah, looks like you can do a thing. Works for me.
Yeah. We have had a few people in the time since I've started who are just like, hey, I want to try it out, or I want to get this one specific piece out or whatever. And we've had people come in. Most of them haven't stuck around super long, but if you're interested, you can always send stuff in or ask us if you could write something.
Yeah. Would definitely like that, actually. But it's one of those things where the whole reason why I got into, like, doing fan site stuff, and I've been doing fan site stuff since 1998. And yeah, that's when I started. it's been, what, 7 years? 7 years now since BlizzPro has been around. So it's just one of those things where the reason why I do it is because it's really cool to meet other people that are as passionate about you are in this stuff. And also, like, I just like the chill environment. Like, we're not in it to make money, even though we probably, you know, they'd probably make my life easier if we were. But I just enjoy just hanging out and chatting with people, and when I have the free time to be able to put out some stuff. Like, now I'm mostly, you know, I don't write a lot anymore. I mostly just do the podcast now. But back in the day, I would get home and spend, you know, every night putting together one or two articles. I did that for a long time. It was a lot of fun because it opens up some doors. I think you found that out too recently.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's, like you said, that's one of the coolest parts, is between the Twitter presence and writing for BlizzPro and maybe a little bit my personal blog as well, but just by getting out there in the community and making connections and writing about Hearthstone, showing, you know, the passion for it, I've gotten some really cool opportunities. And most recently, the opportunity was Blizzard flew me out to Masters Tour Arlington to cover it as a member of the press.
Yeah, and that had to be pretty dope, as you would say.
Oh, yes. Super dope. I had previously covered a couple things for BlizzPro. We were at one of the playoffs, I remember. Mm-hmm. I've done a few things from BlizzCon.
Yep.
And those were all easy for me because I was going to BlizzCon anyway, but also it's close enough that I can drive down because I'm in California.
Yep.
And I did drive down. And then for the playoffs that I went to, and we have like a great interview with Just Saying, and with the esports lead at the time, Che Cho, I think is, I don't remember how to pronounce it, so apologies to Che. But we did some really cool stuff there, and that was local as well, because that was in the esports arena that they had for like a year. And that was right next to my house. So this was the first time that Blizzard had actually flown me out anywhere. And when you cover it, and you're local, whenever you cover an event like that, in my experience anyway, they've given you like food and stuff to make sure that you can stay on site and cover it. And that makes sense, right? But this is the first time that they've, I guess, shelled out some real money, because they had to get me some flight tickets. Yep. They had to get me a hotel room. Yep. Yeah. And that was just really cool. It made me feel really special. And it was just a hell of a time. It was super cool as a fan of the game to be there. The coverage aspects were similar to the other things that I had covered, but it's just really cool. You get to be behind the scenes. You get to meet not really developers. In this case, it was the people who ran the Hearthstone esports. We have some interviews with them up on BlizzPro right now. I got to meet a lot of the players and do some interviews with them as well. And it was just all around a great experience.
And you even got the correct Uber to your hotel, which is the most important part.
I passed the esports test one, but it actually, it was more challenging than you might think, because Blizzard they put an extra boss in the way. They had gotten us vouchers through Uber and it was supposed to be like the vouchers active if you are either in the vicinity of the airport or the vicinity of the hotel, and you have two vouchers, one for each trip, and you can go from hotel to anywhere, but obviously you'd want to go to airport and vice versa. And for whatever reason, just we couldn't get them to work. I tried it. I messaged my contact person. I'm like, hey, this thing's not working for me. It gives me an error message. It allowed me to select the voucher, which made me think I was in the right place, but then it just wouldn't like process for payment. So it ended up being fine, of course, because the hotel happened to have a bus you could call of their own. And even if they didn't, like when I left super early in the morning, then my Blizzard contact just handled it, and he just ordered me an Uber himself. And he also said if he hadn't been awake or able to for any other reason, then he said, you know, you could always just request a refund. And obviously Blizzard was going to handle it, but it was still pretty funny that I'm like, all right, cool, like the very first thing I tried to do when I get here and it doesn't work.
Oh, that's funny. The handful of times I've gone to events, they usually have like a shuttle, that's the first I've heard of Uber like that. But every time that I've gone, it's been out to California to the headquarters, basically, except for the one time when they flew me to Paris, and that was really cool, but that was also like 12 years ago, so
yeah, Uber didn't exist then, JR.
Uber did not exist then, so but yeah, so how's this different than the playoffs, or was it?
The day-to-day was a little bit different, I guess, because we were all there. Our hotel room was almost literally attached to the convention center. There was like a small veranda that kind of like connected them across a parking lot, but it was right there. And so it was, when I went to the playoffs, I was coming from home, and so there was kind of just you show up when you show up, and then you know, say hi to, you go to the press area and you grab yourself a little coffee and then you start going. And it felt a little bit more personal and involved to actually be there and have breakfast with like the other press people and also our Blizzard contact, because we're all, you know, staying in the same hotel. Mm-hmm. So that aspect was really cool. We all went out also like for some dinner, you know, two of the nights and stuff. So it was a great experience. It felt all in all a lot more, just a lot more involved and a lot more personal, which was really cool.
Do you know who some of the press folks were that were going?
The other outlets and news outlets? Yeah. Ozzy Mejia from Shaq News. I've seen him before. There was someone from the Azteca, which was a Mexican coverage. Mm-hmm. There was, we were the Americas group. I assume there was also a European contingent or something, but we actually never really saw them. So I only saw the Mexican coverage. There was another woman there from Brazil. I forgot the name of her her thing, but she said it was a general sports thing. It may have even been ESPN Brazil. I'm not exactly sure. Huh. And there was, Bleeding Cool?
Yeah.
Was there as well. So there were a couple people who I had seen Ozzy and... I feel bad because I forgot his name now, but the guy from Bleeding Cool, I'd seen them at the playoffs before. The two women from the from Mexico and from South America, I had not seen them at the other events. So this was a pretty big thing. They're flying in people. I'm not sure how much flying in they did for the playoffs. It seemed like it was more local when I was doing those ones.
Yeah, that's interesting. Huh. So... kind of walk me through a little bit on, so you get there, the event starting, like kind of walk me through like how it, you know, it felt organized, or like how was your experience with that, like from outside looking in on, like did the players seem happy with how things were going?
I think it went pretty well. The first day I was there was the day before the tournament, and that was the day when the players had to all do their check-ins. So I also went to kind of just check out the area, and they have a little bit of security there, but it's not anything crazy. It's, you know, a guy with a wand. And they check your backpacks. You're not allowed to bring in food and drink at that location, but my understanding is that was because it was a convention center like contract thing more than like a Hearthstone rule. So in other locations you might be more able to do that depending on how those deals work out. They had a little designated viewing area, which unfortunately there was a miscommunication in the days leading up to event.
There wasn't going to be, but it turned out that there was.
Right, exactly. So there was, and it was pretty nice. I'm not sure how much like local viewership there was. The convention center itself was in the middle of a lot of things, but not a lot of like homes or anything. So there were multiple amusement parks right there. There was like a circus or something. And the other half of the convention center was filled with an anime con. Oh, and geez. So it was like a place where you wouldn't have too many people just randomly walking in, right? Like it's a place that people go to go do something.
Right.
And so perhaps that was part of the reason why it was not the highest priority to have like a walk-in event thing. Whereas when they did their stuff in Vegas, they had like the pool party and everything. And maybe the thinking there was like, well, there's a lot of people in Vegas and people could just kind of walk up and discover Hearthstone. And that wouldn't really like happen in this situation.
Yeah.
But it was a nice area. A lot of the players, they seem to like congregate over there and hang out over there in between their rounds. And one of the reasons for that was maybe because that's where you could view the stream. Since the players who are on stream are in the room, and the way the the they had a big screen, you know, where they would show like the players' reactions and everything. Mm-hmm. In other tournaments, you would have seen them maybe putting the stream up there, but they didn't want the players to be able to, you know, see what's in each other's hands and stuff. So you couldn't watch the stream within the competition room. So everyone would kind of go between rounds and go hang out in that other viewing area and watch the stream there and hang out with their friends and talk about their matches and stuff. So that was kind of a cool area. I didn't spend the most time there because I was in the back in the press area, which was kind of backstage, trying to, you know, watch the stream and do some coverage and stuff. But I spent a little bit of time out there as well. And every time I went out there, there were lots of players kind of just hanging out and chatting and stuff.
Who were some of the players that you got to chat with while you're out there?
So we talked to in the top eight. Whenever a match ended, they asked the players, the loser, if the loser wanted to do an interview. And you know, that was an interesting decision because obviously losers tend not to feel great and probably don't want to do interviews. But it was nice that they asked them if they wanted to. And a couple of them said, yeah. We talked to Bloody Face afterwards. I got a couple words from him in my coverage of the event itself. You can check out. He was talking about like the lineups. He liked the French lineup as well as his own. We also talked to Alan Numbers, who is the guy who actually beat Bloody Face in the top eight, and he's quite the character. So we got a nice little interview with him that I'm hoping I could turn into a piece later, because he was kind of just a fun guy to meet. He was all about like his branding and appearances and stuff, and it was pretty funny. Yeah, he was fun. I did a little player profile thing with a lesser known player, Storm Fever, who, if you're active on Hearthstone Twitter, you probably know very well. But if you're only watching Hearthstone Esports or listening to podcasts, you might not know him as well. He's been on streams a couple times. He's been grinding for a bit, and he's been improving, you know, every time. He's gone to a couple of these events, but he's still trying to make that break in. So I kind of I followed him in his prep leading up to the tournament, and I talked to him afterwards, how it went. He was on stream for one game because it was not the feature match, but it was kind of like the rollover match when there was extra time at the end of the round. Mm-hmm. So we saw a tiny bit of him on stream, asked him what that was like. And I might be doing, I'm going to try to get like a profile on him out soon as well. And then kind of just mingling a little bit, talking to players just here or there, not like doing formal interviews or anything, but just, you know, when you're hanging out in the area, you could say, hey, you know, how's it going? Talk to like Insom and ETC were out there. Talk to, I mean, almost all the top pros were there, right? All the grandmasters got invitations, and also the following days, I think it was like a 2 or 3 day event after the tournament, was the Grandmaster Summit.
Oh,
so okay. because they had to be there anyway for the summit, almost all the grandmasters actually competed in this Masters Tour, whereas in some of the other Masters Tours, even though they get free invites as grandmasters, they don't always take advantage of it. But this one, you know, you might as well, right? So a lot of them were there, and that was kind of cool too.
And I think the reason for that is they have to pay for their own like travel and stuff to get there.
Yeah, and I mean, you have other obligations, right? If you're trying to be a pro Hearthstone player, your travel takes up 2 days of streaming time, and you have to prepare a lineup, and that could take some time too. And there's a lot of reasons why it makes sense for them not to go to every Masters Tour. But it's lots of fun when they have the incentives that make them go, because then, you know, we get to see them all competing. A lot of them did really well, actually. Bloody Face and Felcaine, who's the new Grandmaster who just promoted this year, they both made the top eight, but a lot of them, and a couple former grandmasters, like I know Fino, they all did well in, or probably not all of them, but a lot of them did really well in the Swiss and just didn't quite make the top eight.
Yeah. So was there anything about this entire trip or the tournament itself that surprised you?
Well, I think everyone was surprised by just how dominant France was. That was one thing. They got four of the top eight finishers and three in the top four. And the only, well, not the only reason, but it was impossible for them to get four out of four because two of them played against each other in the top eight. So they maximized, they just dominated that aspect. That was impressive. It was really interesting in terms of lineups. because we had a fairly established meta with a few new cards sprinkled in just to throw like a little bit of a wrench in it.
Right.
But at the same time, it was established like for the ladder, but not for tournaments because there hadn't been as many tournaments leading up to it because there was that lull between BlizzCon and the start of the year. And so it was a very well established, I felt like it was a really nice mix between a fresh meta because you didn't quite know what lineups to bring and you got to talk about some interesting tech cards and there's a few new cards you could be like, okay, well, is this new card good or is it just the new hotness? But at the same time, since everyone generally knew all the decks in the meta and generally knew how to play them pretty well, you didn't really see a lot of those errors or stupid mistakes that you sometimes see in brand new metas where people just kind of don't know how to play the decks. So I thought that was a really nice mix. And the last thing that I came away with and that I've seen a lot of the grandmasters come away with is it's just so so valuable and impactful to talk to the members of Blizzard, the Hearthstone esports people yourself, because there's a couple interviews out there now, including mine and those other ones with the HS Replay, and a lot of the answers are the same. I mean, they're not going to give me a different answer to the same question than they gave someone else, but it's and the people I'm seeing not the best reactions to it on Twitter, but when you're there and you're talking to them, you could just see that they just exude this passion and they really want the programs to succeed. They're trying to put on the best show they can. They're explaining their reasoning for what they're doing and it makes sense. And I saw a lot of grandmasters kind of have a similar experience. I said, it seemed where they're posting things on Twitter. Like, I wasn't sure if I wanted to continue competing in grandmasters, but after going to this grandmaster summit, I'm all in and really excited to see what's going to happen this upcoming year. And I had a very similar feeling. And so I wish there were a way for more people to experience that. And it's hard because obviously HS esports can't just like have one-on-one conversations with every single fan of the game. But, you know, maybe if you can make it out to some of these events or BlizzCon or whatever, or if you write for BlizzPro a bunch and then you can get invited, then it's just, it seems like it's so invigorating. And it was just a really nice experience to talk to these people and talk to them as people instead of just like faces or names that you shout into on Twitter.
Well, I think that's the biggest thing to take away that it's there, but people don't think about too much is the reason why these people, people at Blizzard are doing this is one, they're working there because they're very, very likely passionate about Blizzard in general. That's one of the reasons why Blizzard can get a lot of really good talent is because there's a lot of people that want to work there because they see Blizzard as like the gold standard in the industry, right? Regardless of how the last couple of years have gone from a consumer standpoint, from an employment standpoint, well, maybe not as much either there, but I still feel that there's a lot of people like their goal is I want to go work it for Blizzard. And another thing is like, this is their job. This is what they are passionate about. This is, they are being put in a position where they're like, you know, if this succeeds, I'm going to do some really good things in my career because I can put this on my resume. I can show that, you know, I did this successful thing. So of course, like they're going to be highly invested in making this the best experience that they can make it. So they're going to be, you know, very passionate. They're going to want to show that off as well. And people need to remember that, like, they're not sitting there back at home going, oh man, how can we screw over Hearthstone Esports this time? Ha ha ha. You know, that's not how they're wanting to make this succeed within the budget that they have been given. And that's probably the biggest thing that Blizzard Esports has not going for it is because of the budget cuts that they've had. And these people, they're working for the Hearthstone Esports, have to make do with what they are given to make it the best with what they've been given.
And so, I think everything, I mean, even not just the budgets, but the other things, like, for instance, that YouTube deal. I can't imagine that HS Esports was the driving force of that deal, right?
No, no.
You guys talked about it on the main show. That was something they were given, and they said, okay, this is the way that it is now. Yeah. Make the best of it.
Yeah.
And they have. And when I was talking to them, you know, they were talking about some of the benefits of switching over and some of the things they're excited about with their new partner. And I'm sure some of that's kind of just corporate speak, and probably some of that's just seeing the silver lining in the situation you have. But also some of it's like, okay, here's our situation, and let's make the best of it. Let's see what we can do with it. And I feel like these are really qualified people who are trying to do what they can, and in a lot of ways succeeding. It's not, first of all, no system they make could possibly work for every player, because the players have different goals and needs and desires, right? So it is literally impossible for them to make something that everyone likes.
Right.
They're just trying to make something that works for the right target audience, or maybe that target audience is the most amount of people, or a system, of course, since, you know, it's a company that aligns well with the company's interests in advertising, whatever. So there's all these different things that they're trying to do, but they're trying to meet those specific ends in the best way they can. And I feel really honored that I was able to go and talk to them about it. And I hope you guys check out the interviews, and I hope that it can come through in the accounting, that they're, you know, they're really excited about it. And obviously they practice some of these answers to questions that are the questions that they expected to get. You could tell some of that too, but it's just, it was really genuine being there. Even the answers that, you know, that they practice and that had a little bit of some corporate backing or whatever it is that, where yeah. they felt like they had to say things a certain way. Even those ones, you're just like, okay, yeah, this guy's, he's a real guy. He loves what he does, and he's trying to do the best he can.
Yeah. And that is something Blizzard has never strayed from, is every event I've ever been to, every time I've talked to any of them, it's been the same way, and it's been that same way since I have been covering Blizzard games since 2004. So, it's always felt that way. Even, you know, even the last couple of years, where I've said multiple times now, where I think Blizzard is in a new era, and that started in 2018 when Mike Morhaime left the company. I still feel that today. So. Regardless of other things that I don't agree with what that's going on with Blizzard, the people that work there, the people that are putting on events like this and doing their best, and they show that, and they treat you with respect, and they're just trying their best, right? They're doing their best. They're genuine about it. They're passionate about it. They want to be able to succeed. I think that's the biggest takeaway, and that's always been there. I think it's awesome.
And I think the event went pretty well too. From what I've heard, pretty much every player I've seen said they really enjoyed the player experience being there. Obviously, I didn't have the same experience, but I enjoyed mine as well. I didn't really see too many hiccups. We got to a late start on the first day, but you know, whatever, that happens. I don't think that was the biggest deal. I heard people complaining about the commercials on YouTube. I didn't deal with that because whatever our feed was didn't have the commercials, which is kind of funny. We had the internal feed, I guess. So, sucks.
Oh,
lots of dogs over here. About that, the neighbor got home, so we had to bark at him.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, it was just a great experience, I think, for pretty much everyone involved, and I'm really glad that I got to do it. Yeah. And yeah, it was really awesome.
Was there anything about the event that you would have liked to have seen changed, like you didn't think went as well as what it could have?
Well, one thing that a lot of people talked about was whether these events should cut to top 16 instead of top 8, because there were a lot of players with 7-2 records, and a lot of those players were also really high caliber players. And so the, you know, the thinking is, well, just 9 rounds isn't, there's a very small margin for error there. And there's not a huge differentiator between these couple of 7-2s who got into the top 8 and those other, next 8.
They're playing Swiss, right?
Yeah. They're playing Swiss. I mean, it's not like it was random. There's a reason why they did it the way they did. I mentioned it they said that was something that they would kind of think about and look at. Some of the tournaments, it seems to make more sense to have a top eight. And then some of the tournaments, it makes more sense to have a top 16. I haven't gone back to actually check that and to look at the records of the Swiss rounds in prior Masters Tours events. But it sounded like they've had some where, like, there's a clear, like, you know, six people who are just above everyone else. And then it's like, okay, well, who are the two that just kind of get bumped up? And so it's like, we could barely fill a top eight. Why would we want a top 16? And then there have been others like this one where you just have this really competitive top 16 where those top 16 rounds would have been really fun to watch. So that was one thing that I heard people talking about. They wish it had happened this time around. And I'm sure that it is something that Blizzard's going to talk about for maybe the next events, but more likely probably not the next one. That they would have to check out a few, see if this is a pattern, you know, and then maybe implement it in the second season or maybe the next year or something.
So like you said earlier, you got to interview Alex, that's his name, right? And then Drew.
Alex Charsky and Drew Higby,
right? What, like, was there anything from those interviews that you want to be able to highlight? I know we talked about the YouTube deal a bit. I know you asked both of them questions about that. Anything from the event or anything like that that sticks out in your mind?
I mean, we talked about the interview with Drew was really interesting. We brought up the question of alternative esports things. Specifically, the question was about Battlegrounds, but his answer I thought was really interesting in terms of the future of esports generally. He's talked about how in a lot of sports, it is technically a competition against other people, but really it's mostly competition against yourself. You can think of track and golf kind of fall into those categories pretty easily. Same with, like, I don't know, pole vault and whatever. A couple other, weightlifting, all these things where it's mostly just you trying to do the thing as well as you can, or maybe where there's indirect competition. He talked about how just because Battlegrounds doesn't have this, like, direct head-to-head mode, that doesn't mean that it's not something that can be an esport at some point. Right. They didn't have any plans or anything about it that he was going to announce, but he talked about how they'd previously done events, for instance, back when they did arena events. They haven't really done one for that in a bit, but they've done, like, esports in arena mode, even though arena itself isn't really, like, naturally conducive to what you would think would be helpful for an esports mode. And he talked about how they've seen people doing events with Battlegrounds as well, where it's like, you can only queue with two people. So maybe that's, like, you do, like, a bracket where two people go in, and then you have to beat the other person in your bracket, regardless of how well you place in the whole eight. Or another thing, of course, would be, I think, what Twitch did, where you would race to a certain score, where you start with fresh accounts and then people just try to go up to a certain score. So there's lots of alternative ways to develop esports, even if it's not, like, the most obvious head-to-head, I win, you lose esports situation like it is when we do our traditional Hearthstone esports.
Yeah, I think one of the things that sets Battlegrounds back just a little bit right now in the esports side of things is the fact that you can only join one with one other friend, and then you're playing against, like, six random people. So that you can't create, like, you can't create a room and then invite eight people into play. Because if you could do that, you can do something similar to when I was doing the Underlords podcast for a bit. We had Willie on, who as a co-host, and he helps admin a Dota Underlords league, and they do it, you know, where eight people join. And then they take, like, the top four or whatever get points. And then it's like a points thing where it goes week to week and based on how many points that you get. And then they'll pair up, you know, the top eight people and do one thing. And then whoever wins that, you know, wins the thing, basically. And they do it really, really well, to the point where they're starting to get, like, backing from, like, Valve
cool.
And stuff like that. And I could see Battlegrounds being something similar, where if they allowed that to happen in the game. And when I talked at BlizzCon, when they announced Battlegrounds, and I talked to Mike Donay and Ben Thompson, and they said that that was something that they were wanting to do, was allow you to invite 8 people into a room. But because of the limitations of, you know, trying to get this out in a hurry, you know, they had to keep it within kind of the Hearthstone rules of, you know, I bring my friend along. I really think that they're going to, like, take that Battlegrounds and move it, like, either not necessarily move it out of the client, but make its own, like, rule set or something where they're going to start allowing that. Who knows? Maybe that's what Mike Donay and Peter Whalen's working on, even though they're not on the Hearthstone team. Maybe they're making Battlegrounds the game. I don't think they're doing that, by the way.
Trick answer.
I don't think they're doing that, by the way. But, no, that's something I would love to see Battlegrounds as an esport, I think. I think it's fun.
I think it'd be fun. I think the random nature might make it a little bit, I don't know, less overall, like, enticing as an esport.
So it'd be like vanilla Hearthstone.
I just like to see them do events for it, you know? I don't know if we want to call it an esport or not, but yeah.
No, I agree. I'm not sure I would see it as, like, the grandmasters of Battlegrounds or anything like that, but I would love to see something, some kind of event. I just think they have to support it in a way to allow that to happen. And they still have upside down cards in spectator mode, so my hope is a little dim on that.
Yeah. I mean, that was another thing we briefly touched on. That was part of Drew's duties, include telling people how to do that, how to do the hand showing, which is pretty funny. Yeah. But it kind of goes to show the role of esports, right? Where we're talking about how they're making the best of the situation that they have. That's the same idea, where it's like, okay, the client is what it is. How do we put on the best show we can with, you know, what it is? They talked about how they also interact with the game dev team and they work together, of course, but that is going back to that original kind of line of thought we were in.
Yeah, I think part of it there is just, you know, the game dev team, they have priorities that are going to be different than the esports team, and they're going to have priorities that's different from another team, you know, various other teams, and it's all about managing those priorities. And I'm assuming esports isn't the highest priority on the Hearthstone team, unfortunately.
Yeah, maybe not.
When it comes to development, right?
Right. Yeah. I also talked to them about some of the hot topics. I kind of asked both of them some similar questions. We covered things like the route into the World Championship or Global Championships. That was a hot topic last year when it kind of came up that the China region has an open tournament, but no one else really does.
Right.
And basically their responses are that they see the Masters Tour system as like that open tournament. It's kind of like a prolonged tournament where if you do well in the qualifiers, you get into the Masters Tour. And if you do well in the Masters Tour, you get an automatic invite to the next Masters Tour stop, even if you don't get there. And also you get prize money, which is kind of like points, because they base promotions based on total prize money. And so at least in their heads, the way the system's supposed to work is you're supposed to like do well across multiple Masters Tours, and that kind of gets you a spot into Grandmasters, which then you can fight for a spot into the Global Finals. And I definitely know that not everyone in the audience is convinced that this is the same thing. but it kind of, like, I don't know, in theory it makes sense. In practice, I don't know how well it works, because based on last year's promotions, at least, it seemed like it wasn't so much consistency over multiple tournaments as just spiking one tournament.
Yep.
And so this is the first year where we're going to have multiple promotions and relegations. There's going to be a lot more Masters Tours this year. Well, there's going to be twice as many Masters Tours this year. And so I'm thinking maybe the system will work a little better, at least in that sense of trying to be kind of a more flexible, like, system that allows for people to work their way up. I think that was one of their goals. And one of them, I forget which one, I think it was Drew, mentioned that part of the reason why it didn't do as much of that the first year is that the first year was a transition year from, they were trying to do the best they could to switch from the HCT system to this new master's, grandmaster's system. And so that's part of the reason why they considered the prior year's ACT results so heavily in picking the grandmasters, is just trying to do right by those players who showed their stuff in the prior system. But now that they're done with that transition year, they're hoping that it'll kind of work a little better this upcoming year.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious. I'm really curious to see like how the year plays out and how the Grandmaster Championship, whether it's BlizzCon or whenever, we don't really have the details of that yet. Assuming they did it at BlizzCon last year, it'll be the same this year. But based on when BlizzCon might be this year, I'm not 100% sure that's going to be the case. I don't know if you noticed, just going off BlizzCon, like the it's not going to be the same weekend. That is for sure, unless they move locations.
Really? What's going on that weekend?
Well, if you look at the Anaheim Convention Center like schedule, they already have stuff planned. Like, there's already other events going on. They're like Disney events and stuff like that happening at the convention center the normal weekend when BlizzCon is. And
well, that is interesting.
Yeah, so it's not going to be like at the same time. So it, people are wondering, well, is it going to be earlier? Or because there's like there's a weekend. I think it's the weekend before Halloween that is open, and so it might be there. Or are they just going to move it to a different location? Or are they going to go back to, you know, old days where they had it in like September or August? Who knows?
That'd be interesting. And the entire time that I've been going to BlizzCons, it's been that exact same weekend.
They've done it that weekend for a long time now, to the point where I always had my hotel like booked the year before.
Yeah.
And I did that again this year. Now I'm like, shoot, I need to change that. It looks like.
Yeah.
So a little heads up for those people looking for BlizzCon news, but, I'd be interested to see, how everything pans out and how they go. It's just interesting to me that, last year with moving into the Grandmasters, it really felt like, a viewership play where they wanted to get, influencers and streamers, to get that automatic invite to Grandmasters. And now that they're going into the second year and beyond, it's like the way that you get in is through these tournaments that are very like HCT like. But then they move from Twitch, where they had more viewership streaming wise, to YouTube, where they had a lot less viewership. Once again, that was probably because Super Bowl weekend played into that as well. But I don't know. I wonder if the play was more, well, I know the reason why they did it, and it had nothing to do with esports and YouTube. It was because Google gave them a deal. Google Cloud. Yeah. but I'm curious to see how that affects their viewership numbers, because that's how the esports team gets their budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I also talked to them about that whole situation where we started with these really well-known players, and then now we've gone through a few one round of relegations and promotions, and then a couple of players dropping out for like a secondary push in, and so now we have a set of grandmasters that are not as well known overall. I would say certainly not as well known here in the U.S. as the round that was before them, and then we're looking at players like XBlizez, who just won here in Arlington and is therefore very likely to make it into the next round of grandmasters, and this is kind of like his first big break. He's been. I talked to a few of the French players. They said he's been like known in the French community for a long time. He's known as a really good player, and who's helped a lot of the other more well-known players, and he's a good practice partner and everything. But all of that doesn't make up for the fact that, like, outside of the French Hearthstone community, which is very tight-knit and passionate, but not huge, there's like, this guy's not that well known. And so now it's this new challenge for Hearthstone Esports, where they have to kind of sell the viewers on this guy who they don't know. And I talked to them a little bit about that. They mentioned that this is kind of the way that it's always gone in Hearthstone, where players have come and gone from the limelight. And for instance, Hunter Ace was totally unknown 2 years before he won the championship. And then the year before, he kind of won a couple tournaments and people started to know who he was. And then on his road to the world championship that he won, that HCT year was when he just had his like massive breakout, the year of Hunter Ace, and everyone was calling him one of, if not the best player to ever play the game. That all like developed over the course of pretty much a year, two, like, and so they weren't terribly concerned with the problem of introducing the audience, new players to the audience, because they're like, well, you know, we've done it before. This happens all the time. So I thought that was interesting because we think of these players as the players that everyone knows, but like, you know, we didn't know them a couple years ago.
Right. Yeah. There was a time when that player was not known. And the reason why they became known is because they did very well and performed very well and over time. And because of that, they become, well, better well known. So I don't know. I'm just it's an interesting year. I think this is a year that's gonna make or break Hearthstone esports, to be honest. So but I felt like that last year as well, and I felt like they made some good changes this year. That they have a better, like, I feel better this year at this point of time than what I felt last year at this point of time. Let's put it that way.
Oh, that's good. Let's put on it the up.
Way. Yeah, it's on the up. So it's on the up, but I still feel like it's down from where it could have been. So
yeah, I think a lot of us people who are very invested in Hearthstone and Hearthstone esports, we love the HCT system because it was like every week we get to see these top players compete. And even if we don't even watch them all, because it was just like way too much to even watch it all, we still got to kind of like track their progress and be like, oh, okay, like Hunter Ace won again or got second or whatever. And then the next week was when Just Saiyan ended up going nuts and then he went on his tear. And it's like, oh, where's the point leader going to end up? And so for people who were hyper invested, I think that that system, a lot of us kind of look back at it and say, man, that was like the peak of Hearthstone esports. And arguably, you know, there's, by certain measures, it certainly was, but in the end, it was just not sustainable is the reason why they stopped doing it. Like, it's pretty, whether it's from the Blizzard side of like budget, they just don't have the budget for that anymore, or even the player side. A lot of players were talking about how they got burnt out by playing that much and having to travel that much. And so this is, you know, they're trying to find a new system. When they initially switched to the tour system, it felt like it was like the exact opposite of HCT because there was only three events. And then like the Grandmasters are like these special invites who have their own special separate thing. But now that they've kind of expanded this year's system to have six events, that feels like a nice happy medium to me between the HCT and what we had last year. And then there's a lot more fluidity between the Grandmasters and the non-Grandmasters now that there's two relegations every year, and we've seen how one relegation promotion works. And I, like you, have a lot more faith now. It feels like a healthier, more sustainable way to run a system that still rewards some, you know, some of the top players, and you can still kind of follow along with your top stories. And it hits a lot of the marks that I really liked about HCT without overextending both on the Blizzard side and the player side.
And I think you're way more invested in the scene than I am. So considering like when we were at BlizzCon, I was like, hey, what are you doing? And you're like, I'm watching Hearthstone esports up front 24/7. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm back here playing Diablo 4.
Which was fun, by the way. I got to play it eventually.
You got to play it eventually. But is it there anything else that you wanted to talk about on this? Or
One last thing before we go, I want to tease. I got an interview with TJ Sanders as well. The caster slash host slash, I forget what his like official title is, but he went out. People who are very plugged into the system might know he actually had to go out for, I believe it was open heart surgery. So he left right before BlizzCon and kind of like, he told me that he just completely detached from the game. He just didn't want to like stress on it, you know, while he's supposed to be out. He let other people handle it, not get involved. But he even stopped like playing the game for a little bit. Just to completely like focus on his recovery and everything. And he was back on the desk at Arlington. He told me he spent like a lot of time before the tournament like learning all the decks and catching himself up on the metagame. And obviously there's still more that he wants to do, but he was never like, you know, the Sottle who's doing the super play-by-play, like intense knowledge of the meta anyway. He's a solid host who has a good knowledge of the game. And it was nice to see him back in form. And I got to talk to him, and that interview should be coming. I still haven't transcribed it, so I'm not going to pin myself down to anytime super soon, but it'll be coming soon. We talked about lots of fun stuff, including how he got into casting and his job on the desk, which was a fun, interesting story. And we talked about like the issue of diversity within the casting group, where a lot of people have commented that the casters are almost all male and mostly white male on top of that. And so I talked to him about, you know, initiatives to try to bring that in, and the So You Think You Can Cast initiative, and all of that good stuff. So that should be a fun one. I really enjoyed talking to him. He's a nice guy. I've always enjoyed talking to him. Even though I've only briefly met him a couple times, he like recognized me and said hi and stuff before we even sat down for like in the hallway when it wasn't even clear that I was supposed to be meeting with him or anything. So really cool guy. And I'm glad he's back, and got some cool stuff to share with you guys about that.
That's awesome. Yeah. I like TJ. I've never met him. But I love his, hosting, and the little skits that he does and all of that. Like the dude's he just seems like a fun guy.
Definitely, yeah. And he was talking about how they're doing they did a lot of their skits and prep for it at the Grandmasters thing that happened right after Arlington. So he was like noodling skits and stuff in his head, like prepping for that event that was going on the next couple of days. So
nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think with that, it is probably time to get out of here. So with that said, I'm not gonna go over the whole rigmarole that we normally do at the end of the show. But I do want to point a couple things out real quick. With the sets we're gonna be kind of stagnant here in the next probably month or so until we get some more details about the next year of Hearthstone and what the next set's gonna be. So we would really appreciate any emails that you guys would want to send, questions that you have, anything you'd like us to answer or anything like that. Just do that over wellmet@blizzpro.com, and we would be happy to answer any questions that you have on some future shows. And then if you'd like to help support the show, there's a couple ways of doing that. Patreon.com/wellmetpodcast is a great way to do it. As little as $1 a month gets you like usually early access to the show, gets you a little pre-show, post-show stuff. There's some tiers above that as well that you could take advantage of if you want. Another great way to help the show as well as through iTunes reviews or podcast reviews. Just head over to iTunes and do a search there and leave a nice little review, and we'll read it on next week's show. So anyway, this is where we do our shout outs and how can people get in touch with you. So Deck Tech, where can people find you at? Do you have any shout outs or anything?
Yeah, so the place to find me is on Twitter. I am there way too much. Usually, like, just constantly, so.
Yeah, tweeting about, like, Oscar parties and stuff like that.
Some sort of LA stuff, like Oscar parties. There's a combination, mostly Hearthstone, a little bit of Law stuff, a little bit of Oscars parties, you know.
Yeah.
So that is at HS Deck Tech, so you can find me there. That personal blog that I talked about is The Tavern Blog, spelled BLAWG, because in theory I talk about Law there as well. I don't do it a ton, but I have. So the taverblog.wordpress.com. All of that, by the way, I didn't say it here, but I'm a lawyer, so that's why I talk about law sometimes. and of course, writing for BlizzPro. So you can do that at hearthstone.blizzpro.com. You can always keep up with all the news and everything there. That's where we do like all the special news announcements, cards. That's where we're putting all these interviews. So there's lots of good stuff there almost every day.
Awesome. As for me, I just wanted to definitely give a shout out to you for coming on and joining me for about an hour to talk about your experience at Austin. So I'm really glad. I need to bring you on the regular show sometime. Like, we need to, like, someday when Danny or Ray can't make it, I need to bring you on.
Man, I'd love it. Whenever we can make it work, I am down. I forgot to do my shout outs though. So before we go, real quick, shout outs to all of the Hearthstone Esport people, Drew, Alex, TJ, everyone I talked to there, and my handler / contact person, Eric Elliott, who made it all happen. That was dope. I love it. Thank you guys.
Awesome. Anyway, thanks for joining us for episode 226. That was the last episode. This bonus episode here of Well Met. You can find more awesome Hearthstone content throughout the week over at hearthstone.blizzpro.com. You can tweet us at Well Met Podcast or email us at wellmet@blizzpro.com. I usually don't have problems talking through this end part, but today it's awful. So anyway, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye.